just a moment. As you know, my name is Justin Clark. I met most of you this weekend. It's been a real pleasure spending time with you. In just a moment, Chief of Staff Reince Priebus will be coming in, say a few words, and then the Vice President and the President will be in. After that, we have time with Administrator Pruitt, Administrator McMahon, and Secretary Mnuchin, where they will give brief remarks and then be available for questions. So if anybody, you know, feel free to ask away, and we look forward to the interaction and what you have to say. So just stand by for another moment, and we will be able to get started. Thanks very much.
Scott Walker. It's been a busy few weeks, but we're grateful that you're able to join us this morning. Each of you brings a unique experience as chief executive of your prospective states, and speaking on behalf of the President and Vice President, I'm certain we'll be able to rely on your expertise over the coming weeks and months as we continue to follow through on our promises to the American people. This is a big week. President Trump tomorrow will give us his first address to a joint session of Congress. The President is excited to speak to members in both parties, the judiciary, and the American people about his vision for our nation. That vision has been demonstrated over the course of the last 5 weeks that has seen President Trump take decisive action on jobs and our economy, national security, health care, and a whole host of other issues. You'll hear much more about those topics and more tomorrow night, but suffice it to say that while President Trump has many ideas about how he intends to make America great again, he'll also be relying on all of you to make that happen. It's no secret that our cabinet has many former governors included. That's a clear indication of how important the President sees all of your work in your states. In fact, he chose a governor as his running mate. Vice President Mike Pence served Hoosiers in Indiana for 4 years. During that time, then Governor Pence has led that state and saw unemployment cut in half and significant reforms to health care that have become a national model. As Governor of Indiana, Vice President Pence increased school funding, expanded school choice, and created the first state-funded pre-K plan in Indiana history. He made career and technical education a priority in every single high school. Under Vice President Pence's leadership, Indiana also made historic investments in infrastructure. Taking off a list of his accomplishments in just 4 years, you can see why President Trump asked him to run as his running mate. But in all seriousness, I hope you all are encouraged that the President values the leadership of governors across this country. As the Vice President recently said, the door to the West Wing will always be open to every one of you to come in, talk to us, and we'd love to learn from you as much as you're willing to give us advice. So let me yield the podium to a former governor, a man who will lead us as Vice President with the mindset and experience of a governor, our great Vice President, Mike Pence. Thank you so much, Reince Priebus, and good morning to all, to Chairman McAuliffe, to Vice Chairman Sandoval, America's governors, our cabinet officials. It is an honor to be with you today, and an honor to have the privilege to welcome you to the White House. You know, it's humbling for me to think that just a year ago I was seated with one of you. I was sitting among you, but thanks to the confidence of our new president, and his historic victory last November, I now have the privilege to serve in a new capacity. And it is the greatest honor of my life to be Vice President to the 45th President of the United States of America. And let me speak as a former governor for just a moment. As a former governor, I first and foremost, on behalf of the President and the First Family and my family, I just want to thank you for your service.
and the service of your family. I know I speak for the President and the First Lady when I say I hope that last night was a small token of the appreciation that the President and our administration feels for the service that you and your family render on behalf of the people of your states. And let me also say, I want to thank you for joining us today. It has been a weekend of vigorous discussions beginning with last Friday, and I know the President's looking very much forward to the discussion that will take place here at the White House this morning. You know, when I was a governor, I just wanted a president who would listen to me, right? A president who would work with me, who would respect the important constitutional responsibilities and role that not only the state played, but that I played as a governor. This morning, let me assure you, you have that in President Donald Trump. The President recognizes that America's governors have a unique responsibility and a unique perspective that will be an important part of the national debate now and going forward. The President's viewpoint, you are the CEOs of your state, and the CEO who has become President of the United States understands that, and he has directed our entire administration to work with you in crafting solutions that will improve the lives, the prosperity, the security, and the well-being of the people that we all serve. And rest assured, today is an annual meeting, but it is just a beginning of what we anticipate will be an ongoing dialogue. And I know the President and I and this administration look forward to partnering with you as we make America great again. Under President Trump's leadership, I truly do believe that this is a new day for state and federal collaboration for the betterment of the American people. We look forward to working with you on a range of issues. We'll talk about today, I expect, from health care to transportation to public safety to education, and most importantly, for jobs. I expect we'll have our differences, but at the end of the day, we'll never forget in this administration what you never forget, and that is that we, all of us, each of us, have the awesome privilege of serving the great people of the United States of America together, and we'll stay focused on them. Now, I believe this administration will be the best friend America's governors have ever had, because we have a president who recognizes that when your states succeed, America succeeds. So now it's my great privilege to introduce to you my friend, our host, a man I've come to know. I like to say he is a distinctly American leader. Broad shoulders, clear vision, a big heart. He loves his family and he loves this country with an unshakable faith in the American people. So, ladies and gentlemen, governors, members of the cabinet, the President of the United States.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Wow. That is pretty good, I'll tell you. Coming from governors, I can't even believe it. That's so impressive, and I very much appreciate you being. And thank you to Vice President Pence. He has been so wonderful to work with. He's a real talent, a real guy, and he is central casting. Do we agree? Central casting. He's been great. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the White House. The First Lady and I were very, very happy last night to host you. We saw some real talent, military talent, musicians who were fantastic, and everybody enjoyed it. I'm very proud to have so many former governors in my cabinet. Vice President Pence, as you know, big governor from a very great state, a state I like very much, Indiana. Nikki Haley at the UN. Is Nikki here someplace? I think so, yes. We have Rick Perry is going before. We're trying to get people approved. We can't get them out. But Rick is going to do a fantastic job. Sonny Perdue will be joining the cabinet very soon. Terry Branstad will be our ambassador to China. And interesting story on Terry. Every time I spoke in Iowa, he'd say, please don't say anything bad about China. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean? He said, I like China. And we do a lot of business with China. And really, just don't. And I said, So when it came time to pick in an ambassador, I called him up. I said, you like China? And I can tell you, China is very, very happy with that choice. So we've made everybody happy. Right? These governors, thank you, and thank you, Terry. These governors have been bold reformers, and their success shows why we need to make states the laboratories of democracy once again. Many of you have shared past frustrations with waiting for permission from federal government and agencies. And I understand that. And I've had many people tell me about it. And it's been catastrophic for some of your states. You know your citizens and you know they want things done, but they don't get things done. And it's not your fault. Sometimes it's your fault, but they understand that. But sometimes it's not your fault. We're going to speed it up. Because that's not how a partnership is supposed to work. The government should not stand in your way in delivering needed reforms and services, and it won't. We're going to move very, very quickly environmentally with Scott and so many others that are involved in the process of regulation. We are going to be cutting. We're going to be doing the right thing. We're going to be protecting people environmentally and safety-wise, but we're going to be moving it quickly, very quickly. And I can, speaking of that, I know many of you, and I've spoken to some of you last night about it, have many projects that are literally tied up because of environmental concerns, and it's been in for years and years and years. The project your state wants, great for employment, everybody wants them, and they couldn't get them out of environmental protection, and we will get them out. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be approved, but they'll be rejected quickly. One way or the other. They'll be either rejected quickly or they're going to get approved. I would say most will be approved. But you're going to know you're not going to wait 9 years or 11 years, some of the horror stories that I've heard. Under my administration, we're going to have a true partnership of collaboration and cooperation. We will get to the answers and we will get them quickly. And the flexibility you need to implement the reforms that you are going to have in order to make decision-making proper and decision-making fast. So we're going to do both those things, proper and fast. One of the most important responsibilities for the federal government is the budget of the United States. My first budget will be submitted to the Congress next month. This budget will be a public safety and national security budget, very much based on those two, with plenty of other things, but very strong. And it will include a historic increase in defense spending to rebuild the depleted military of the United States of America at a time we most need it. And you'll be hearing about that tomorrow night in great detail. This is a landmark event, a message to the world in these dangerous times of American strength, security, and resolve. We must ensure that our courageous service men and women have the tools they need to deter war, and when called upon to fight in our name, only do one thing, win. We have to win. We have to start winning wars again. I have to say, when I was young in high school and college, everybody used to say, we never lost a war. We never lost a war, you remember. Some of you are right there with me, and you remember, we never lost a war. America never lost. And now, we never win a war. We never win. And we don't fight to win. We don't fight to win. So we either got to win or don't fight it at all. But where we are 17 years, almost 17 years of fighting in the Middle East, We're up, I saw a chart the other day, as of about a month ago, $6 trillion we've spent in the Middle East. $6 trillion. And I want to tell you, that's just unacceptable. And we're nowhere. Actually, if you think about it, we're less than nowhere. The Middle East is far worse than it was 16, 17 years ago. There's not even a contest. So we've spent $6 trillion. We have a hornet's nest. It's a mess like you've never seen before. We're nowhere. So we're going to straighten it out. This defense spending increase will be offset and paid for by finding greater savings and efficiencies across the federal government. We're going to do more with less. I got involved in an airplane contract. I got involved in some other contracts. And we cut the hell out of the prices. I mean, we saved a lot of money, tremendous amount of money, beyond anything that the generals that were involved, they said they've never seen anything like this before. On one plane, on a small order of one plane, I saved $725 million. And I would say I devoted about, if I edited up all of calls, probably about an hour. So I think that might be my highest and best use. Because if we can do that, our budget will be, might be my highest and best use. And there are many other places it's all the same. And in one way, that's a good thing, because we have an answer. And David is going to do a fantastic job at the VSA. David is sitting there shaking his head. Stand up, David. So we can't get our people through cabinet, but he went through, was it 95 to nothing? How the hell did you do that? Boy, oh boy, he must be good. You were the one. 100 to zero. Wow. Shows you, hey, we can do it. But we do. We have still quite a few cabinet members, and they're just in limbo, waiting. It's like obstruction. It's obstruction. And but eventually we'll get them, and they'll put their people in, and we'll get those agencies, et cetera, to work. We're going to do more with less and make the government lean and accountable to the people. We can do so much more with the money we spend. With the $20 trillion in debt, can you imagine that? The government must learn to tighten its belt, something families all across the country have had to learn to do, unfortunately, but they've had to learn to do, and they've done it well. My budget increases spending, and the increase in all spending for federal law enforcement also, and activities having to do with law enforcement, will be substantially increased, and we will fight violent crime. You look at what's happening in our cities. You look at what's happening in Chicago. What's going on in Chicago? We will fight violent crime, and we will win, and we'll win that one fairly quickly. Once we give the local police, local law enforcement, the right to go in and fight it, and we back them monetarily and also otherwise, and we're going to win that one. We're going to win it fairly quickly, I believe. My budget also puts America first by keeping tax dollars in America to help veterans and first responders. So important. This budget follows through on my promise to focus on keeping Americans safe, keeping out terrorists, keeping out criminals, and putting violent offenders behind bars or removing them from our country altogether. And I must say that we've been treated very well, very, very well, on the job that General Kelly has done at the border. It's tough, it's strong. I was talking last night to Terry McAuliffe, and he said, you have to mention this, because he met with, where is Terry? He's around here someplace. Terry, he met with General Kelly, and I think I can say you were impressed with General Kelly. And he said, you have to get the point out that they're removing the bad ones. And that's where our focus is. It's the bad ones. We're getting some very, very bad players out of this country. Drug lords, gang members, heads of gangs, killers, murderers. We're getting them out. That's what we're focused on. The press isn't covering that, unfortunately. But it's something that is very important. We're getting the bad ones out. And that's always where I said I was going to start. I was going to start with these bad players. And they are bad. They are rough and tough. And we're getting them the hell out of our country. And we're bringing them to where they started out. Let their country do what they have to do with them. So the budget, which is going to be a very big part of tomorrow night's speech, is going to be I think, a budget of great rationality, but it's going to have to do with military, safety, economic development, and things such as that. Great detail tomorrow night. We're also going to do whatever we can to restore the authority of the states when that is the appropriate thing to do. We're going to give you back a lot of the powers that have been taken away from states and great people and great governors. And you can control it better than the federal government because you're right on top of it. You have something that's controllable. So I think that's going to be very important. You see that already taking effect. We have to let the states compete and to see who has the best solutions. They know the best how to spend their dollars and how to take care of the people within each state. And states are different, and people are different. So the governors are going to have a lot more decision-making ability than they have right now. All states will benefit from our economic agenda. We will reduce taxes very, very substantially and simplify the tax code. We're also going to make taxes between countries much more fair. We're one of the only countries in the world that people can sell their product into us and have no tax, no nothing. And they get rich. And yet, if you want to do business with them, you'll have taxes I've seen as high as 100%. So they sell into us, no problem. We sell into them because we don't sell in because the tax is so high that they don't want us to sell into them. So I know that's always been a point of contention, but to me, it's just fair. It's just fair. It's reciprocal. It's fair. And so we're going to be doing a lot of work on that, and that's becoming a very, very important factor, fairness, because I believe in free trade. I want so much trade. You know, somebody said, oh, maybe he's a total nationalist, which I am in a true sense, but I want trade. I want great trade between countries. But the word free is very deceiving because it's good for them. It's not good for us. I want fair trade. And if we're going to be taxed, they should be taxed at the same amount, the other countries. And one of two things is going to happen. We're going to make a lot of money, or the other country is going to get rid of its tax. And that's good, too, because now the product, like Harley-Davidson, I was talking to them, the product will now flow into other countries where right now they can't do it. So we're going to make it easier for states to invest in infrastructure. And I'm going to have a big statement tomorrow night on infrastructure. We spend $6 trillion in the Middle East, and we have potholes all over our highways and our roads. I have a friend who's in the trucking business. He said, my trucks are destroyed going from New York to Los Angeles. They're destroyed. He said, I'm not going to get the good trucks anymore. He always prided himself on buying the best equipment. He said, the roads are so bad that by the time we make the journey from New York to Los Angeles or back, he said, the equipment is just beat to hell. I said, when has it been like that before? He said, it's never. He's been in the business for 40 years. He said, it's never been like that. 40 years, never been like that. So we're going to take care of that infrastructure. We're going to start spending on infrastructure big. And not like we have a choice. It's not like, oh, gee, let's hold it off. Our highways, our bridges are unsafe. Our tunnels, I mean, we have tunnels in New York where the tiles are on the ceiling and you see many tiles missing. And you wonder, you know, you're driving 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour through a tunnel. You take a look at the Lincoln Tunnel and the Queens Midtown Tunnel, and you're driving and you see all this loose material that's heavy. You know, it was made many years ago, so it's heavy. Today it's light. It used to be better. The problem is you got to hold it up. And I say to myself, every time I drive through, I say, man, I wonder how many people are hurt or injured when they're driving at 40, 50 miles an hour through a tunnel and a tile falls off. And there's so many missing tiles and such loose concrete. So we have to fix our infrastructure. It's not like we have a choice. We have no choice. And we're going to do it. And it also happens to mean jobs, which is a good thing. We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare and get states the flexibility that they need to make the end result really, really good for them. Very complicated issue. We have Tom Price, just got confirmed, sitting here. Stand up, please. And I spent a lot of time with Governor Walker and Governor Rick Scott the other day. We were talking about it. They're really very expert on the subject, and I want to thank them. They spent a lot of time with me. Governor Christie, who's here someplace. Where's Chris? Governor Christie. Thank you. And so we have a lot of talent and a lot of expertise here, I will tell you. And we have come up with a solution that's really, really, I think, very good. Now, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated. And statutorily and for budget purposes, as you know, we have to do healthcare before we do the tax cut. The tax cut is going to be major. It's going to be simple. And the whole tax plan is wonderful, but I can't do it until we do healthcare, because we have to know what the healthcare is going to cost. And statutorily, that's the way it is. So for those people that say, oh, gee, I wish we could do, you know, the tax first, it just doesn't work that way. I would like to do that first. It's actually, tax cutting has never been that easy, but it's a tiny little ant compared to what we're talking about with Obamacare. And you have to remember, and I say this to Democrats in the room, of which we have many, Obamacare has failed. If you go to Minnesota, where they had a 66% increase, and the governor of Minnesota, who's with us today, said Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is no longer affordable, something to that effect. I think that might be it exactly. But the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable. Obamacare has failed. I say to the Republicans, if you really want to do politically something good, don't do anything. Sit back for a period of 2 years, because 17 is going to be a disaster for Obamacare if we don't do something. Let it be a disaster, because we can blame that on the Dems that are in our room, and we can blame that on the Democrats and President Obama. Let it implode, and then let it implode in 18 even worse. Don't do anything. And they will come begging for us to do something. But that's not the fair thing to do for the people. Not the fair thing. Politically, I think it would be a great solution. Because as soon as we touch it, if we do the most minute thing, just a tiny little change, what's going to happen? They're going to say, it's the Republicans' problem. That's the way it is. But we have to do what's right, because Obamacare is a failed disaster. And it's interesting. It's sort of like when you see it with politicians, you see it with President Obama. When you know he's getting out of office and the clock is ticking and he's not going to be there, his approval rating goes way up. Even though, you know, not that active in the last period of time, the approval rating goes up. That's not him. That's like almost everybody. I see it happening with Obamacare. People hate it, but now they see that the end is coming and they're saying, oh, maybe we love it. There's nothing to love. It's a disaster, folks, okay? So you have to remember that. And very importantly, we are going to work to restore local control to our nation's education system. Betsy's here someplace, and she is going to be, I think, fantastic. I think she's going to be fantastic. Stand up, Betsy. Betsy feels so strongly, and she's had such support from so many people. You know, you don't see that too much, because you see the anti, you never see the positive. But I can tell you, I've had so many calls while she was going through that horrible process. That was a tough, tough, nasty process. And she hung in. She was strong as you get. But so many people were calling Betsy saying, you will do such a fantastic job once you get it. It's like sometimes I'd say it's much tougher to get into Harvard than it is to stay there. Does that make sense? It's tougher to get into the Wharton School of Finance. You can't get in. But if you get in, it's fine. You get through, right? I think you're going to do a fantastic job, and we're very proud of you. And you took a lot of heat, but you're going to do great. So she wants to bring decision-making powers back to parents, back to the families, and back to the states, where they can really control education. And just finally, I'm looking forward to working with you on these projects and so much more. We're going to do these projects and so many more. And I thank you all again for being here. It's going to be a really productive discussion, so productive that I'm going to ask the press to start leaving, because I wouldn't want them to see any great productive session. But then we'll see hearing about it. Again, thank you very much all for being in the White House. We'll do this many times.